In the Megillah, you know, they don't particularly speak about what? That you have to read the Megillah. Although it's written, you know, that Esther sent, what, Tichtav Esther, Sefer, and so she sent it to all the Jews, Hakroivim, Hacholkim, Hakroivim, you know, those who are far away and those who are near to the city of Shushan and so on. Leoso sim, that they should do, of course in English we translate it, they should observe. But I'm doing now, I'm translating it literally, okay? Who wrote the Megillah? It says so that Esther and Mordechai. No, I'll show you. Vatichtov Esther v'asavichayil Mordechai ha-yudi es kol tokev l'kayim es kol divrei ho-igeres ha-zeus.
Esther and Mordechai?
Esther and Mordechai, right. They collaborate. Okay, right. Okay. Right.
Right. Name for her, so
yes, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So it's written, you know, that they wrote to all the Jews to do what? The Kayyem is called Divrei or Geras HaSos. They should fulfill everything that they do. And what way do you do it? Because to make it Yom Tov, right? Festival day, Mishta, Simcha, right? Feasting. And, you know, rejoicing, and of course previously they also said Mishloach Monos, right? That they should give gifts, you know, one to another, about Tonis Levyonim, and to give gifts to the poor. So these are all actions that we do in order to commemorate Purim, right? So that is called over here Asiyah, okay? To do. What is being done? How we do things to celebrate Purim. But Zechira Menalon, how do we know that we have to remember Purim? Which means, how do you remember it? You remember it by reading the Megillah. How do we know that? You understand the distinction that they're making over there. Zechira Menalon. So it says, Amakro. So it says, the text says in the Megillah, it says, Hayomim Ho'ele Nizkarim Menasim, that these days are remembered, right? In other words, that we have the reading of the Megillah, the Na'atzim, and we have all the other things that we do. The Chol Yevayim, and Didom Dino, and so on. We're going to come to the discussion of these things. All right. So, Iskash Zichir La'atziyah, right? And therefore, we find that there is a comparison made between what? Zichira, in other words, remembering by reading the Megillah, La'atziyah, right, and doing those things that we do in order to show festivity on Yom. Okay, yeah. So that being the case, this is what we wind up with. But as we know, not everybody's in agreement with all these things. We always have somebody who comes in with a kvetch, a kasha, or something, or doesn't have that same opinion. So the Gemara says, Masnison, our Mishnah, which of course speaks about the reading of the Megillah, if you remember, whether it should, you know, 14, 15, 11, 12, 13, under certain circumstances and so on, right? Says that our Mishnah is the Lo Kehai Tana. It's not in accordance with the opinion of a certain Tana. Tana, remember, is also one of the teachers at the time of the Mishnah, the Tanya, who taught the following, and usually a Tanya already indicates either a Baraisa or a Tosefta or something like that. And what is the statement? The statement is Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha Omer. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha says, Karakim Hamukofim Choymo Mimos Achashvei Rosh Korma Hamisha Osar. He says that cities that were walled in the days of King Achashvei Rosh, they are the ones who read on the 15. And what, of course, did the Mishnah say? Mishnah said cities that were walled at the time of Mimos Yeshua bin Nun, the days of Joshua the son of Nun. Now, I don't have to tell you that between the time of Joshua and the time of Achashverosh, quite a few centuries passed. Okay. Needless to say, it's at least 1,000 years or so. So it would make a difference as far as what cities would be concerned, right?
Yeah. The walled city would be...
The walled cities would be where you're supposed to meet on the 15th. Not necessarily. It might refer to outside. They say it might refer to outside. In reality, it doesn't, but it might. You see, we always have all these possibilities, okay?
So
yeah, yes.
Why, maybe you might have mentioned this before, but why walled cities any different than unwalled cities?
No, because it says specifically in the Megillah, okay, now you're not prosim, Ayoshim Beyaprizos, therefore it says, you know, those Jews who live in open areas, in open cities, not with unwalled cities, all right?
That, I understand.
All right.
Why was that distinction made?
Okay. No, they're not combined. They're two separate questions. Two separate questions. The Megillah itself stresses the fact that those who live, who are what we call prosim, which as we say, means that people who live in unwalled areas, okay? Whether it's cities, villages, whatever it may be, but they live in unwalled, okay. Korim biyom arba osor. It says that they should read it on the 14th, okay?
I understand what you're saying.
All right,
but
now,
why was that designation made?
The designation was made.
Why should there be any difference between a walled city and a prosim?
No, prosim are, okay. The answer is that this is what it says in the Megillah. It doesn't say specifically
why
we have the distinction, but the distinction was really made on the basis of the fact that Shushan was a walled city. And therefore, the feeling was that cities which are walled should all follow the example of Shushan. Kir Shushan, as we just said a couple of moments ago over here. It's like Shushan, right.
They did it on the
15th.
They did it on the 15th, right.
And the Prussian, which are open cities.
They had only one day of fighting, so they rested on the 14th. So that was the day that they celebrated, on the 14th. Okay? Yeah. Okay, this is it. It's only to show honor, really, to the fact that in Shushan, a great miracle took place. Okay, now, of course, that'll be disputed too, but that's already besides the point. Okay? All right, so we say that then there's a disagreement between the Mishnah, right, which stresses cities walled from the time of Joshua ben Nun as compared to Rabbi Yoshua ben Korcha, who says that it's cities that were walled in the time of Achashverosh. So they ask, my Talmud, the Rabbi Yoshua ben Korcha, what is the reason behind Rabbi Yoshua ben Korcha saying that it should be like what? Like in the days of Achashverosh. They says, Kishushan, it should be like Shushan. Ma Shushan, just as Shushan, Mukefes Chaimah Mimos Achashverosh. Just as Shushan was a walled city dating back to the days of Achashverosh, but not necessarily what?
In the days of Joshua,
it was not a walled city, you understand? Maybe it didn't even exist in the days of Joshua, right? The Korin Bachamisha also, and they read the Megillah on the 15th. So Av Koshimu Kefes Chomo Mimos Achashverosh, so likewise, any city which is surrounded by a wall from the days of Achashverosh, Korin Bachamishosa, they should read it on the 15th. Okay. So now the Gemara says, Levitan Didon. And how about the
backing up,
no, it's only explaining what Rabbi Yoshua ben Korcha says. Okay. So now they say, Levitan Didon. In our Tana, in other words, the authority, it doesn't mention in the Mishnah, right, who exactly is the one who said it, but it's, you know, obviously it represents some great Talmud Chochem, you know, who came with this idea, okay? So our Tana, it says, My Tama Yalif, why? Why did he come to the conclusion, you know, that what? That cities that were walled in the days of Joshua, you read on the 15th, whereas those that were not walled, you read on the 14th. So he says, Yalef, prosi, prosi. he learns a Gezeirah Shavah from the fact that we have the word Prazi mentioned in two different areas. Where does it say that? First of all, Ksiv Hocham. Here in the Megillah, what does it say? It says, Al Kain HaYehudim HaProzim. Therefore, the Jews who live in unwalled areas, in open areas, right? Then what about them? So they have to read it on the 14th, right? Ukhasiv Hosam. And in the Torah itself, right? In the Torah itself, it says, Levad Meyorea Prozi HaBemiyod, with the exception of open cities, which are very, very numerous, right? So, Mala Halon Mukhefes Chomimosu Shebenun, just as the Torah is talking about walled cities that existed in the days of Yehoshua ben Nun. After all, he lived in the same time as Moshe Rabbeinu, right? So these were walled in his day, right? So Afkan, so likewise in reference to Purim, we have to say Mukefes Chomo Mimosu Sheben Nun. So we apply the same thing and say that which cities, which walled cities, does the rule that you read it on the 15th apply to? So he says, it applies to those cities that were walled in the days of Yeshua ben Nun. All right. So in other words, he has this teaching of Yeshua ben Nun. Right, right. So in other words, he has this particular teaching, as we say, you know, a Gezeirah Shavah, that you have language, you know, which is similar in one place to language similar to another, and from that you make a drush, but that's only valid if you have a valid tradition that goes way, way back to the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, okay? So, if you have such... Yeah, so that the Mishnah, the Tanna of the Mishnah has that. But obviously what? We have to say that Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha does not have the same one, okay? Yeah. Right, so it says Bishlamon, alright, in accordance with what we already learned of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcho, right? So it says Lo Amar Ketan Didon. He did not say the same thing as the Tana and the Mishnah, right? Why didn't he? Because the less lay prosi prosi, he does not have this tradition of a Gezeirah Shavah between the word prosi here and prosi over there. Okay? So as long as he doesn't have it, so therefore he has his own. Alright. So now the question is, Elatan Didon. Alright. Now let's get back to the Tanna in our Mishnah. It says, My Tamalu Amak Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcho. So why doesn't he say the same thing as Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcho, namely that it should be cities that were walled in the days of Achashverosh? Why doesn't he say that? It says, My Tamalu. Why? It says, the ho islay prosi prosi, because as we said, he believes that there is, he has the Gezeirah Shavah, prosi prosi. Okay? So, hochi koma, and this is what he says, le Shushan, but we take the city of Shushan itself. The Avda Keman, right? Shushan follows which example? Because after all, Shushan exists afterwards, right? And he says, in other words, it was not a walled city when? In the days of Joshua, you understand? So in that case, then on what basis is Shushan celebrating the what? The 15th and not the 14th. Lo kiprozim, velo kimufovim. Not like prozim, right? Not like the opposite, nor like the mukovim, because, you know, it was not walled in the days of Joshua. Of course, we know that. We know that. Believe me, he knew that too. But the point is that in order to make a teaching as to when do you do this and so on, he wants to give a reason behind it, okay? I assure you, they knew the text very well.
Yes. Future reference for the students, right?
No.
They're arguing on the basis of how do you interpret the text. One has a tradition to interpret one way, and the other one does not have that tradition, and so he interprets it his way. Right, of course.
No proof that it's either one.
Right. Yeah.
So,
Pardon me?
There's no proof text for either one, either position.
You're right in that each one could argue its own case, okay? Sure, each one could argue. But if you take it on that basis, so getting back to the Tanna and the Mishnah, then on what basis does he justify what happened in Shushan? That they read it on the 15th,
yeah, right, right.
Okay? So Omar Rava, this is why along comes Rava. You see where we are?
Yeah.
Omar Rava, so Rava comes along and he says, the Yami Lord Kadi, and others say that there was a sage by the name of Kadi.
Who?
Kadi, yeah. A chacham by the name of Kadi, okay. Yeah, I know today it is, that's correct. But anyway, this was his name. If it was not Kadi, maybe he was a caddy, I don't know. All right. So he says, Shadi Shushan, he says, Shushan is different. In other words, you don't learn from Shushan. It's different. Why? Ha'il the Nasa Bodes, because the miracle actually took place in Shushan. So, Mishnah Molatan Didon. Okay. All right. So let's analyze the text of this a little bit further. Okay. In accordance with what our own Tana says in the Mishnah, Hainu Dichsiv, this would account for the fact that, as we read the Megillah, it says that, you know, they sent in, to the all Jews near and far and so on to celebrate, and it says Medino and Medino, right? Province and province, okay? The year by year and city and city, in other words, okay? So he says Medino, Medino. Why one province and another? He says the Chalek bein Mekof and Chayma min Mos Yeshua min Nun Mekof is Chayma min Mos Chachashverosh. He says because it's to tell us that you make a difference between cities that were walled in the days of Yahushua as compared to cities which first had a wall in the days of Ahasuerus. Namely, if it was only in the days of Ahasuerus, according to the Tanna of the Mishnah, then in that case, that's not considered a walled city. So it's the same as Prosi, okay? The same as if it were unwalled, okay? Yes? Right. Oh, I don't doubt that's right. But the point is, if it is, according to him, if it is a walled city in the days of Yahushua bin Nun, then that gives it greater prestige, greater yichus, whatever you want to say, so that therefore the special ruling should apply to such a city as compared to a nouveau walled city, right, which exists in the days of Ahasuerus. You understand? He said, yeah. If it obviously dated back to Yahushua bin Nun, he would be in agreement. Okay? Again, we're trying to understand how they are arguing this point. Okay? Yes? To stress the fact, as we said before, in his interpretation of the Gezeirah Shoveh, what was true of the word Prozi in the days of the Torah, therefore has to be true of Prozi in the days of Ahasuerus afterwards. Okay. And therefore, obviously, what is the difference between Prozi? The other one is Mukefas Choma, okay? The city which is walled. A walled city, therefore, has to be one that exists in the days of Yeshua, and the other one at a later period. Yes?
So, to bring it back to the time of the Torah.
Right, right. And to show that that has a special use.
Okay.
Okay?
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
If the Mishnah had said, made reference to walled cities that were.
From the days of Yeshua bin Nun, right.
No argument here.
That is absolutely correct.
So why did the Mishnah say that?
Because the Tana of this Mishnah, the one who is the author of that particular phrase in the Mishnah, he didn't make a mistake. This was a teaching that he had based upon the fact that his teacher before him and the teacher before him and the teacher before him, etc., etc., interpreted the word prozi as a gezeirah shoveh that dates way, way back, you see.
So he had the habit of using the gezeirah shoveh.
Yeah, obviously in this particular case he used the gezeirah shoveh. That's the reason why. Yes.
My wife and I do
I'm not arguing right now on behalf of either Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcho or about the Tana Didot, okay? I'm telling you only, how is the discussion going over here? Each one is defending his own, okay? And of course we know that for all practical purposes, what is the halacha today? The halacha is, you know, that it follows what the Mishnah says, and since we don't know which city was walled in the days of Shua bin Nun, so that therefore we say, if we have that tradition, and Yerushalayim has that tradition, okay? So that therefore in Yerushalayim we observe Purim on the 15th day instead of the 14th, okay? Except as I told you, you know, in a year in which you have Purim on Shabbos or something like that, yeah? The 15th on Shabbos. And the other exception would be Shushan itself. Why? Because Shushan is different because the miracle took place over there. That's the reason, okay? Are there any other cities? Well, some say that maybe Tiberia would qualify.
And the diaspora?
No,
we either consider the diaspora as not having been walled in the days of Shua bin Nun, and therefore. Absolutely. Throughout the diaspora, not only in Eretz Yisrael, too, everywhere they celebrate the 14th, except in Yerushalayim.
Does anybody celebrate Shushan?
We celebrate Shushan Purim only by virtue of the fact that we skip Pachton on that day. It's considered, you know, like a semi-holiday. But today, I doubt it, because Shushan today would be under Persia. And Persia has not been very hospitable to the Jews lately. I don't have to tell you that.
Iran.
How does this certainly have walled cities? Has Jews had Jews living here?
Hundreds of thousands.
But they actually, Mitzrayim was part of the empire of Ahasuerus.
Okay, you ask a very good question, but I have to answer you that they don't have the yichus. Period. They don't have the yichus. Okay. Since they don't have the yichus, so they're not considered a walled city. First of all, Cairo itself and Alexandria, they're later cities, as you probably know. Okay. Cairo was first built in the days of the Arabs, not the days of the Egyptians. Okay. And Alexandria, of course, dates back, you know, to the conquest by Alexander the Great, by Ptolemy, you know, who was his general over there and became the first Greek king of Egypt and so on, okay? But that's all a later period, as you realize. All right. So hopefully we'll get out of this labyrinth over here. Okay.
Onwards,
right. All right, so we say, okay. So what about Shushan? So he says, the of the command, right? So what is Shushan based on? So it says, look at Prosim, look at the coffin. So the Rover, right? So Rover says, we have a law of Kadi, right? That Shan is Shushan, that Shushan is different than the Nasir Bundes, because the miracle took place over there. All right. And then we continue and said, Bishlam or the Tana Didon. So, okay, good. Accordance with the Tana Didon, Haina Dixiv, then why, you know, then the Megillah continues saying, Medina, Medina, and Iva, Ir, right? Province of province, city and city. So, what is Medina of Dina? Province of province. It's the Chalek bin Mukaf and Chayim and Mimos Yeshua bin Nun, the Mukaf and Chayim and Mimos Chachashrim. It's in order to distinguish between, you know, a walled city in the area in the days of Yeshua bin Nun as compared to those that first had walls in the days of Achashrim. So, okay, that's fine. And what about Ir va Ir, city and city? So what do we do with that? So he says, Nami. Also it says, Lechalek, to make a distinction, Bein Shushan, between Shushan and Shor Ayuros, as compared to the other Ayuros. Now notice again, here we have to be careful. Well, in modern Hebrew, Ayora means like a town or something like that, right? Whereas Ir is considered a city, but that's modern Hebrew. You understand? In the time of the Talmud, it has a somewhat different significance, particularly, you know, in this area over here. What is the term that they use for the walled city? They didn't use the word Ir. What did they use? They used the word Krach, which means literally a metropolis today, but here in the Mishnah it refers to a walled metropolitan city. In other words, a city, you know, which is big and has a wall around it, okay? So we use the word Krach today. Okay. So, in other words, Shushan should be classified as what? As a krach or as an ir? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Should it be qualified as a krach, walled city, or as an ir, a city which may possibly have a wall but doesn't have the wall, with the same yichus of antiquity dating back to Yoshua ben Nun? You understand? So, therefore, they say ir va'ir means that Shushan is unlike all the other cities, right? In that, you read it when? On the 15th, okay? So, Il Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcho. All right, so let's get back to Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcho, who said what? The walled cities have to be walled in the days of Achashverosh, right? So, Bishlam Omedim and Dino, okay, fine. So we know that there's a distinction between, you know, let's say, one area and another. Well, we said, you know, that you make a distinction between walled and unwalled, right? The Chalek ben Shushan and Shavar is okay, so he says that Shushan is different from all other cities. Elohim v'ir, l'mayosa. So, what is he going to do with the words year by year, city and city? In other words, which would imply in the first case that there is a difference. Lemayosa, why did it come? Why do we have it? So, Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcho. Okay. So, Rabbi Yeshua said, you know, to you, he tells you, he argues with you as follows. He says, Uletana didan minicha? Tell me. And with the Tana and the Mishnah, does it go so glatt? Does it go so smoothly? Came in the Islay, prosy prosy. Right? If he has already the Gezeira Shoma, this is the argument Yoshe Ben Korcho against the Tana Dedan, right? That if he has this Gezeira Shoma of prosy and prosy, then Medina, Medina, Lomeli. So what does he need that Medina, Medina? Elo Kral Nidrashahu. So I have to say, you know, that the text is there in order to teach us something. Namely, what? What is Rav Shimon Korcho teaching and learning from it? He says it makes a difference between a city, Ir, right, which was not walled in the days of Achashverosh, as compared to the Ir, a city which was walled in the days of Achashverosh. This is how he interprets it. Okay. Uchta Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, right? And this is also in accordance with an opinion cited by Yoshua ben Levi, who came the Omar, the Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, who said, as Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi said, Kirach, in other words, here's a new teaching, a big city, in other words, a walled city, v'chol ha-somuchlo, that also includes any area which is right adjacent to it, okay? The cholam nira imo, all right, and likewise any area which can be seen together with the big city, right? So nidon to krach, so it is considered, it's judged as if it were a krach. In other words, it doesn't have to be just within the walled area, but it would also apply to an area outside the walled area, but which is adjacent and which can be seen from the city itself, in the walled city itself. In Yerushalayim, I have to tell you, this is a question, okay? Now, you know, because the city limits of Yerushalayim, they keep expanding and expanding and expanding. I mean, if you've been to Yerushalayim, you know. Like, for example...
There's no wall there now.
The wall is around the old city. You have a wall over there. You still have a wall around the old city. course, that wall was built by Suleiman, but obviously it's located, you know, where walls existed in ancient times that were destroyed by the Romans and then rebuilt, in the, you know, from time to time, you understand? So we do have a wall around, but it's only around what we call Ha'ir HaTika, the old city, okay? But what about outside of the Ha'ir HaTika? Should it be considered? Right, when should they celebrate? Should they celebrate the 14th or should they celebrate the 15th? Okay? So we talk about... Yeah, well, it's accepted that the wall, that Yerushalayim had a wall at that time. Okay? That's... in Yerushalayim, therefore, you know, what do? As the city continues to expand and expand, okay? There was one of the newer areas in Yerushalayim is Ramot, northwest part of Yerushalayim, okay? And of course, Ramot has been building, okay? My son and daughter, excuse me, my daughter and son-in-law, they're among the first families to move in into a section of Ramot called Ramot Polin, okay? If you've ever been to Yerushalayim, you see that these houses, they look like egg crates, so, but they're very, or beehives, whatever you want to call it, okay? The architecture is very different, okay? It's high on a hill, and of course Ramot means the heights, okay? And at first, there was a rav over there who paskened that we're too far from the main city. There's intervening area over there where there's a forest. The Yar Yerushalayim is over there, and so there's a forest over there, and you have to go on the highway in order to get to Ramot. Okay, so there was a rav who paskened that Ramot should read on the 14th, but because he was in doubt, so therefore they should read both on the 14th and the 15th, okay. But subsequently he was overruled by others who paskin, that Ramot is as much a part of Yerushalayim as any other area, and that being the case, so they celebrate on the 15th today, okay. And this is true of all Yerushalayim, everything within the area of Yerushalayim itself. But go outside Yerushalayim, let's say a place like Tel Aviv, no questions, 14th. Tel Aviv, Haifa, any place, right? Yeah, right. Mevaseret, okay. But Mevaseret is already considered too far geographically from the heart of Yerushalayim in order to qualify. And this is what we're going to come here right now, yes. No, they celebrate. To them, this day is Purim. That's correct. Right, the day before is not Purim, but they celebrate. Right, that's correct. Okay. Krach becomes right. Right, the Kol Aniri Yimoni Don Kifach. And Ad Kama, the question is, how much should be the distance, for a place to be considered within the vicinity of the big city, right? So Rabbi Yirmiyah said, the Tamon, and those who say it wasn't Rabbi Yirmiyah, but it was Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, he said that it is Kimah Chamsan and Tveria. It's like the distance between Chamsan and Tveria. Well, Tveria you all know, but obviously Chamsan was the name of a little village near Tveria. And he qualifies it. He says, mil. It's a mile. In other words, it's a mile away. So anything within a mile of Yerushalayim, for example, or a mile of Tveria. You notice over here, he mentions Tveria. But as I say, in Tveria, the question is whether it was built in the days of Yehoshua ben Nun or not. The city itself actually dates back to Tiberius Caesar, who was the second emperor of Rome, so obviously it's not that ancient in that respect, okay? But there were other settlements in the days of Yahushua which were located approximately in the same area as Tveria today, okay? All right, so it says, all right, in other words, if it is like from Chamsum to Tveria, which is a mile. So now the Gemara says, mil, so why doesn't he say, if it's a mile, why does he have to say Chamsum and Tveria? So he says, Hokamash Molon. So he says, the reason is to teach us that the Shiura of the mil, what is the measure of a mile? Kamahava, how much is it? He says, Kamah Chamsum and Tveria. Okay? It is the distance between from Chamsum to Tveria. We know that it's a mil. Of course, I have to tell you that the mil at the time of the Talmud is not necessarily a mile in America, okay? Because the word mil itself is based on the Latin word mille. In Latin, Mila possible means literally 1,000 paces.
Right.
1,000 paces, 1,000 steps. So, of course, the question is, you know, so how much is a pace? You understand? Right. So, therefore, the Roman mile was not quite 5,280 feet. It was a little bit less than that. Okay? All right. We'll stop at this point because now we go into another inyan. And so, Yitz Hashem. All right, today is the
16th.
Okay, May. I lose track myself. I've been helping the milk, you know. It's the 16th of May, the year 2001, and we are now at the very bottom of Megillah, Omid Beis, that is Daf Beis and Omid Beis, okay? All right. Now, since we already quoted Rabbi Yirmiyah, or as some others say, Rabbi Chiya Barabba, you know, concerning what is the distance for a town to be nearby to a big city in order to read the Megillah at the same time as the walled city. So now they quote a few other things that he had to say as well. Very interesting things, okay? So we're on the third line from the bottom. Yomer Rabbi Yirmiyah, V'yitema Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, second line from the bottom, right? They say, Manspach Sofim Amorum. Who recognizes what Mansbach is? The answer is these are the final letters. A Mem, right?
Oh, yeah.
A Nun, right? A Tzadi, a Pei, and a Chaf. I don't know if it isn't Kimenapets, but the Gemara says Mansbach, okay. So Gesundheit. So what they're saying is over here that who are the ones who came up to the fact, who came out with the idea that you have to make a difference in the letters between whether the letter exists any place in the word except at the end, as compared to when the same letter occurs at the end of the word, okay? And the Gemara says it was the prophets who did that. The Tzofim they recognize as being the prophets, okay? The Tisperot. So, isn't it logical? No, it's not so logical. Why? Because this contradicts another teaching that we had. The Hoksiv, don't we have a pasuk which says, Eila ha-mitzvot, these are the mitzvahs. Of course, it's these are the mitzvahs which Moshe gave, you know, to Bnei Yisrael Bahar Sinai, right? This is the conclusion over there, okay? Conclusion of Sefer Vayikra, okay? So, how do they interpret the idea of Eilah HaMitzvot? These are the mitzvahs. It says, She'ein novi rashai lechadesh tova miyata. From now on, no prophet is permitted, has no permission in order to create a new mitzvah which is not already in existence in the Torah itself. Okay? So, if that's the case, then how does that jibe with the fact that what? That they say that the prophets came and they did it because the prophets, here it says the prophets are not allowed to do it. Whatever Moshe Rabbeinu was given, whatever the Rabbeinu Shalom told him, that these are the mitzvahs, okay?
Well, so, Rabbeinu also introduced mitzvahs like
Hanukkah. Of course, you're absolutely true. No question about that. But, you know, as we're giving a tithe, we're giving the tithe. But I have to tell you, since you raised the question, how come, you know, that the Chachamim created, you know, mitzvahs like lighting candles on Shabbos? Torah has no reference for it, right? Not only that, but what do they say? Shekhar Shom mitzvah yisob v'tzivonu l'adik ner shel Shabbos. Ditto for l'adik ner shel Chanukah, okay? There's nothing in the Torah that says that. Obviously, Chanukah certainly came afterwards and so on, right? Or what else did you mention? Well, the Mikra Megillah actually itself too. I mean, reading Megillah, this is too, I mean, later than the Torah itself. So they interpret a verse in Devarim, it's being Parsha Shaitman, says, well, Lois also wrote to you, not to depart from what the sages tell you. Okay? So that, therefore, if the sages tell you that this is it, then it's as if they are acting what? In the spirit of the Torah that was given to us on Mount Sinai. So that this is the explanation. Okay? course, otherwise you're right. I mean, but if you consider it from that point of view, that we have great Chachomim who, in the spirit of the Torah that was given at Mount Sinai, tell us that this is the way you have to observe this and this and this, and then, you know, there is a basis of authority for it. Okay? Alright. So, this is one aspect, first of all, questioning, you know, how is it that the Levium can come and they make a change? And secondly, we have another problem. The Yod HaMar Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda says, you know what? He says, Mem v'samach shebeluchos. Here we go to the next page, right? B'neis hoyo'om. Okay. We know the Torah says that haluchos ba'aseh l'kim heimor, right? That the luchos were the work of the Rebbeinu Shlomo himself, right? The ha'michtov, michtov elohim hu, right? And so on, right? And then it also says, Mishnei Evrahim heim kisuvim. From both sides they were written. In other words, the implication is that when you were able to see the Ten Commandments from one position, if you saw the reverse, it would still say exactly the same. Okay? So that's one thing. And then, since we have two letters in Hebrew, which in the middle, you know, there's nothing there, namely the Mem and the Samach, right? You know, with other letters, okay, you have something, you know, to attach.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's attached to one, you know, attached to a bottom, a top, whatever it may be. But the Mem and the Samach, what are you going to do with them? Right. So, therefore we say that the Mem and the Samach, they were there in the Luchas, and they stood over there by a miracle. It's one of the Rebbeinu Shlomo's miracles, that the Mem and the Samach were there. Okay, so good. All right, now,
but
I also...
They,
yes.
Did anybody except for Moshe Rabbeinu see that? Because he broke them before anybody had a chance to see them, right?
Yes, you're right about that, right, when he brought them down. That he smashed them to pieces because the way you know they served the Egel HaZohar. On the other hand, even but you know he got a second luchos, right? So the second luchos also it's written. All right, in the second luchos, Moshe Rabbeinu is told Solocha, go and carve out, hew out, you know, two tablets of stone. Okay, but that is written the Echtov al Haluchos. So Rebbeinu Shlomo says to him, and I will write on these tablets of stone, it's Hadvarim Shehoyim al Haluchos Horishonim. You know, I will write on, you know, these tablets, right, the words, you know, that were already written on the first one, Asher Shibata, which you broke. Okay? So, in that case, then we have to say that the miracle still persisted in the second one. It wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu who carved out the words this time, but Rebbeinu Shlomo is still carving it out. So this belongs to the nature of miracle. Okay. Now, what's at issue over here is, of course, the fact that the Mem, what kind of a Mem would require a miracle in order to be, and of course the answer is it would have to be a final Mem, because the other Mem that has a leg and so on and so forth, right? So that doesn't require the miracle. How about Sama? It would have to be an ordinary letter, right?
Very similar, eh?
Right. Oh yeah, no question about that. But that Resh and Dalet also look similar, and this is why in Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, there's a great big Dalet at the end. But on the other hand, when you have in Pasha Mishpon, and there's a great big ratio over there, so that you shouldn't mix up Echad and Acher, you see, right? Okay, so this leads to the following question, all right? So you say, in, yeah, it's true, he says, what? Mahava Hava. Yeah, you had both, what? Literally it says, yeah, they were. What is the date? This is the question, right? So the answer is, you had the letters of the Aleph Beis, right? The Lohavi Yade, however, they did not know Haibe Emsa Teva or the Haibe Sof Teva, right? They didn't know which form of the letter should be in the middle of a word. Of course, what he says in the middle, it could be any place within the word, and which have to be at the end of a word. Okay? So the Osut Sofim, and that's when the Nevi'im came along, Vitakinu, and they made a Takonon, in other words, they decreed what? Pesuchin b'yem sateva u'susumim b'sof teva, that those which are open, literally, Sukkim, right? By that he means the ordinary form of the letter, no, the way it normally exists, yeah. Okay? So this belongs within the word itself. In other words, it could be anywhere. It could be in any position, beginning from the beginning of the word, you know, to the next and last letter, right? Mm-hmm. But stumim, those that are closed up, they belong besof teva, at the end of the word, okay? So, what's unhappy about this? They come back, they say, but look, you didn't answer my original question. So, finally, what? Ela mitzvah she'novi osid l'chadesh. Dova me'ata. Didn't we say that these commandments mean that a novi cannot come and create something new on his own? So, the question is then, why do we credit the sofim? Why do we credit the Nevi'im, right? With the fact that Matzapach, as we said at the bottom of the previous page, Matzapach, right? Sofim Amorum, right? That the prophets came and they determined, you know, which it is. So he says, Ela Shechochem. So we have to say that, well, people forgot which form belongs where, right? The Chosru V'Yisdom. And so the Nevi'im came along, and it wasn't that it was a new invention. The letters were there already in existence from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Even prior to him, but certainly in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. But they came along, and once more they made the arrangement, and they decided, you know, that this form of the letter goes any place in the word except at the end, and this form in the letter, you know, goes only at the end, the final letter. Okay.
Why did they introduce that in here?
Okay. You ask a very good question. All right. But you know, we've had many cases in our study of Talmud during all these years where there is a tendency to group together statements of the same, you know, attributed to the same person. Okay? In reality, if they didn't have all these statements that they have now introduced, beginning with this one, we would say that, okay, it interrupted a discussion of the Pasuk, which said, Medina or Medina, ear by ear, which we have already explained, but, you know, on the basis of which are Bukov and Chayma, which are not, and those places which are very close by to a big city, what rule does it follow, and so on and so forth. But the rest of the Pasuk was left out, namely Mishpacha, Mishpacha. That was left out. All right, for the purposes of a drash, you don't have to quote a whole Pasuk. But as we'll see a little bit later on, I don't know if we'll get to it tonight, if not, we'll get to it in Mirz Hashem next week, okay? So we'll see that they get back to that in order to give another explanation. What does that part of the Pasuk have to deal with? But inasmuch as we already mentioned Rabbi Yirmiyahu, and there are those who say it was Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, right? So in that particular case, so they quote a couple of more things that he said. All right, he said this, he said other things too. And the next thing that he said is in regards to the Targum, to the Torah. Okay? By the way, I want to say, Tosfos has a little problem, others as well, with, we didn't really solve the problem. We know now that they came and they decided, okay? The question is, which was the original form of the letter? This is what they discussed too. Mm. Was the original form of the letter what we call the final letters, or was it the other form? You understand what I'm saying? There are those, for example, who hold. It's very clear, for example, in the case of, all right, let's say a final man as compared to an ordinary man. What is the final difference between them? The answer is that the ordinary man is open, right? Whereas the final one is closed. So if you can imagine a line at the bottom closing it, so we would say then that maybe the original was the ordinary man, and that the final man was what happened. However, there are others who hold punktfakel, just the opposite. Namely, that the final form was there, but people in a rush to write, so they opened it up, in other words, because it was faster for them to write it that way. Okay? With the nun, again, if we say that the final nun was the original form, so how did we get the ordinary nun? They started off that way, but then they went into the next letter, and so they gave it a turn that way, and so, you see. So, this is the argument that still goes on and has not been resolved. But the Gemara is not interested now in fighting out that fight. Okay, right. But it's an interesting question, which came first, okay? Yeah.
But the original writing by Moshe Rabbeinu, the first Torah, can we look into the Torah and see how the words are ended with what Ashur is writing? Is it closed memoir? It's open memoir.
Yeah, but we don't have his original. I mean, we have, you know.
Yeah,
what
but we have the Mesorah that they.
Right, we have the Mesorah. That's what we have, exactly. Yeah.
So there's some old.
No, you look into the scroll and see how.
Yeah. Right, but you know, every single Torah scroll is a copy of a previous Torah scroll.
Right.
You realize that. I mean, the Sofer, when he writes the Torah scroll, he's supposed to look into another Sefer Torah in order to know exactly how to write it. Although there are some differences between one Torah scroll and another. Because the one that we usually see is called Vodei Ha'amudim. What does it mean? It means that practically every column on the top begins with the letter Vav.
This is fairly recent.
Yeah, but it wasn't the original.
300-400 years old, they were not the
original. Correct. It was not the original, okay? So, you know, I've seen other Torah scrolls that don't have the Vodei Ha'amudim, and when years ago when I worked in the library, the manuscript room at the library of the Jewish Theological Seminary, and there I saw Torah, you know, fragments of Torah scrolls that go back hundreds and hundreds of years and so on. So it wasn't necessarily exactly the way we see it now.
I've seen many.
Right.
Even in the old shoes, I've seen many of them there. There's one right over here. That one is which was far from Germany.
Yeah, it could very well be, right. As I say, only that it's more common today to have it look like that. Right, yeah.
I think most of the ones you find in Prague do not have.
Yeah, that could very well be.
I think
be.
It may have to do with A and B or C.
All right. But as I say, you know, they're all copies of each other, so that you can't tell on that. Presumably, it was based upon the kind of, you know, that was written by Moshe Rabbeinu. So. But, okay. This is the Mesorah. All right, so this is what he's saying over here right now, okay? Namely, you know, okay, so Rabbi Yirmiyahu v'itim Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, and again, we have another statement attributed to him, and this time it's about the Targum. It says, Targum shel Torah. When it came to the Aramaic translation of the Torah, he says, Unkelus hager amoro, it was Unkelus the ger, in other words, he was a convert, right, to Yiddishkeit, and he said it, the P Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua. And he based his translation into Aramaic based upon the opinions of Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Eliezer, of course, the two of the great Talmidim, of course, of you know, of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Okay, so he based it upon them. Okay, how about Targum shel Nevi'im, the Targum, the Aramaic translation of the prophets? So that was Yonason ben Uziel Amoro. It was Yonason ben Uziel who said it, and of course he also had an authority to back him up, and who were his authorities? It was Bepi Chagai Zechariah Malachi. He did it after consultation with Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, who were, of course, the last of the Nevi'im, and at the same time, they're also members, if you remember, the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah as well. They represented the transition between the prophetic age and the beginning of the rabbinic age. Okay? And what happened at the time when he translated the Nevi'im into Aramaic? It's written, V'nizdaza Eretz Yisrael shook and trembled. Arba meos parsal, 400 parasangs by 400 parasangs. In other words, all of Eretz Yisrael shook and trembled when this happened. Why did it do so? Well, we'll find out in a second. Because apparently, Eretz Yisrael, the Rebbeinu Shlom, is not 100% happy with the fact that the words of the prophets have been translated
into
a foreign language. Yeah, translated into, Aramaic. So Yotzusa Baskol. So Yotzusa Baskol emerged. The Amra, and it said, yes, the Baskol is a heavenly voice, and it said, Mi huze shegilas yisorayin of ne'odam. Who is it has revealed my mysteries to human beings? In other words, the teachings of the prophets. So Omar Yonas Omen Yisrael Raglov, so Yonas Omen got up on his feet. In other words, he didn't hesitate, but he admitted the fact that he had done it. The Omar, but he said, Ani hu shegilis yisorechem ne'odam. I am the one who have revealed your secrets to human beings. God Louis Viodola Fonecha, it is known unto you. Shalonech Vodiot Sisi. I didn't do it in order to gain glory for myself, Velonech Vod Vesaba, nor to gain glory for my family, for my father's home, literally. Elonech Vodecha Sisi. I did it for your sake, for your honor. Shalom Yibu Machlekes Biswell, so that there should not be any Machlekes, should not increase among Israel. Naturally, why should there be any great Machlekes? Because of the fact that the people don't know how to teach, how to explain, a verse or something like that, then everybody's going to get into an argument, and the Yonatan Manuel wanted to give an explanation that would be acceptable, so that people would not get into fights arguing about what is the meaning of a particular pasuk. Okay, so this is why he did it. Okay. The Yod became...
Who was he talking to there?
He's talking to Rabbeinu Shalom. Of course. He heard a bas call. A heavenly call. Yeah. A heavenly voice spoke to him, so he answered the heavenly voice. Yes. Okay, you ask a good question, but the answer is simply this. No, that wasn't it. The Torah is very specific as to what is a mitzvah, what's not a mitzvah, etc., etc., okay? At least, we hope that it's very specific, even though we still have to interpret it, we have to have a tradition and everything else in order to be able to explain. But theoretically, it's open. It's more... shot, shall we say, okay? It's simpler to understand. Whereas, with the prophets, I don't have to tell you. A, sometimes we don't understand what is the reference that the prophet is referring to, because they spoke at different times, okay? And we don't always know what is the background of this one or that one. It's true that some of them are dated. Like Yeshayahu, we know he says the days of Uzziyahu, Yotam, Machaz, Chizkiyahu. This we know. Okay. We know the case of Yirmiyahu, when he also began prophesying and so on and so forth. With Yechezkel, we know. But we have other prophets where they don't even indicate, at what time they were prophesying. So we don't always have the background. And then you'll see also, when you study Nevi'im, it's not like reading a narrative or anything like that. Instead, you have individual statements here. Yeah, you may have a chapter here. With Yeshayahu, it's more, shall we say, or with Yirmiyahu, it's more orderly, sequential, or something like that. With Yechezkel, yes and no, because Yechezkel has visions, you know, that go back and forth and so on and so forth. I mean, he's pulled by his hair and things like that and so on. So, in other words, we have difficult things to understand, and without, you know, an explanation, we wouldn't know. So it remains in the realm of mystery, and the Rebbeinu Shlom did not want unworthy people to reveal his mysteries, okay? All right, so now we come to one other area, namely what? Targum Shel, yeah, the old vacation of Gadol is Targum Shel Ksuvim. He also wanted to reveal the translation of the third part of the Bible, namely the writings. Yotzes Abbas called the Yomelo, so Abbas called, came forth from heaven, the Yomelo, and said unto him, Dayecha.